Blog Talk Radio.
Real sports guy.
All right, now is the Renegade. People's Radio. It's RSG up in your headphones. Allow me to introduce
the illustrious Queen Anne Hoop. Marcus the Game Changer. The Seventh Jackson. D. Will. The Ill Executive. He's like Suge Knight without the anger management issues. Phil P, the sports PhD. This dude is coming at you from all angles. He's got all the bases covered. There's not a whole lot about sports this brother don't know.
Can you dig it, sucker?
Featuring Ray, Justin Page, Eric Hamilton.
RSG fam is like, woo!
Now, I blame it on Nintendo.
It's definitely a gin party around here. Definitely a gin party.
Don't bring any Kool-Aid.
It don't get no better than this, baby.
I want winners.
You guys act like it.
Pick it up a little bit. Okay? Get your chin up. Smile. Smile.
Anybody can be peachy.
Don't get no more realer.
Welcome to the Real Sports Guys with Real Guys Talk Sports, RSG Renegade Radio. You're live with the big show. I am your host, Marcus the Game Changer, and one third of the illustrious three-man booth. And before we get into the proceedings this evening, allow me to say you could have been anywhere in the world, but you're here with us. We appreciate your patronage. Now, with no further ado, allow me to introduce the other two-thirds of the illustrious three-man booth. To my right, I got my man D. Wills. Holla at the people.
That's right. No finger roll, Pat Ewing. You know, feeling like that. I'm hyped. It's good to be back with the band, y'all. Y'all been going. Y'all Twitter game or y'all text game has been going up. I saw all that stuff coming up. People get excited. Still get excited. I know this is gonna be a good show.
Yes, sir, man. I've been waiting on this one for a while. It's good to get back on the airwaves. Hit the fans off with another podcast. Again, you listen to Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. The last, but not least, the final third. Right? He's like the leg on Voltron. Like, Voltron wasn't right if he didn't have a leg. You know? but PhD makes us go, man. He makes us run. So, my man, CLT Sports PhD, what's happening, Captain? How you feeling, brother?
What's up, fellas? I'm coming from Cleveland, Ohio, the city of champions. Last time I was on, I said the Cavs are 9 games. It only took a 7.
Yeah, we gonna give you the last word tonight because I know you got some like backed up, some late like Cavs celebrating you got to do because it's been so sporadic because once the summer hits, man, we all get going our different directions. But listeners out there, we're about to hit y'all off with some consistency. All right, football season is starting. Tonight's show, we got a great show lined up for you all. We're going to talk about the Rio Games, the Olympics. We're going to talk about fantasy football for the bulk of the show and get you guys prepared. RSG style, the only way the Renegades can. You know, this is the People's Podcast, so we're going to get you ready for your fantasy football drafts and to dominate this fantasy football season, as we all tend to do. So, Phil, man, how is Cleveland changed?
Man, it is, optimism is infused. All of a sudden, you know, Believe Land came out, the 30 for 30 came out in May, I believe. You know, maybe April, somewhere around then. Within a week or two after the finals, they had an update on Believe Land, alternate ending to reflect the championship, man. It's just, instead of it being a pessimistic sports town, all of a sudden all is good. And that lasted for a few weeks, and then the RNC rolled in town. You know.
Wow.
And then, you know, unfortunately, there was a string of, you know, just a lot of horrific things that happened in our country. That kind of overshadowed some things, but I think overall, though, you know, Cleveland was under the spotlight, man, you know, from the finals and then the RNC, and even with the RNC, you know, I think Cleveland did pretty well in terms of handling things. So overall, you know, this was kind of the summer of Cleveland where, you know, you look at the things that were covered in Believe Land and just, you know, from the years of the mistake by the lake and just all the different issues of the mayor's hair being caught on fire and the lake catching on fire. And, you know, we had a nice run from the parade that had a million folks down. I mean, it was just an amazing, amazing couple of months. And in general, I mean, people are optimistic about things as far as sports and even the Browns. There's optimism there. The Indians are playing well. But it was a special time, man, as far as the Cavaliers. You know, we were down there. We watched most of the away games in the stadium. And, you know, as far as the finals, including Game 7, and it was just amazing down there. You know, it was an amazing time. And like I said, the city just, you know, I'm not from Cleveland, but I've been here off and on for 11 years, from 11 out of the past 16 years. And so I feel like I'm a Clevelander, but, you know, I shed a few tears the night they won, but that was nothing like my friends who are from Cleveland. I mean, it hit them hard, you know, the folks that have grown up here. And It was just amazing. The night that they won the championship, just walking the streets down there, you just saw random people, you know, white, black, old, young, just hugging each other, just strangers, just relating. It was amazing. I mean, I've been around sports my whole life, just like you guys, just deeply entrenched in sports, and I've never seen anything quite like it, anything. It's amazing.
Man, that warms my heart right there, man. I'm glad you got to experience that and be a part of that, man. And I'm glad, you know, the Cavs were able to win one for the land and take care of business. And that was, you know, that was an exhilarating Game 7, man. There have been few instances where, and we talked about this on the last podcast when we had Justin on, there have been few instances where I've been at a sporting event and not directly involved, like as a participant, and my heart was pounding. Like I'm watching on TV, and my heart is thumping in my chest that those last like three or four possessions. I couldn't imagine what that was like, man. If you actually had like some real like deep ties or real like tangible connection to either one of those teams, man. So I'm glad you got to enjoy that, man. And you got to see that.
It was amazing. You know, I went to game two. To the first three rounds, I was at game two, and it was special. You know, Devon and I, we went to game, I think it was game five, the Toronto series. And it was special, but the Cavs were the clear favorites in the East. But once the finals started, man, games one and two, you know, we watched, you know, they were playing in Oakland, but we watched in the stadium in Cleveland. And then I was out of town the middle four games of the series, but came back for game seven. And, man, that team, I mean, based on what the Warriors did last year, I mean, they were just like Goliath. When they won, they won. They won big, you know. And when they beat OKC, they came back 3-1. I have belief. The last time I was on, I believe the series was either 2-1 or we were down 3-1. But the way we had lost, it was just – I mean, you guys were laughing at me when I said we were still going to win, but you guys had every reason in the world to be laughing at me because the way we had lost, you know, it was – I mean, you know, and I'm not – like, if it wasn't my team, I would have been that way too. And, like, I listened to that podcast, and I didn't half believe myself either when I was like, we're going to come back, we're going to win. We may need 9 games, we're going to win. I mean, it was – I don't know, man. It was just something about there was some calmness about LeBron. And then I do think Draymond getting suspended, I think, made a difference. Had he not get suspended, I don't think the Cavs would have won. I don't. I mean, like, I think that shifted the entire series. And I don't know. Like, I think we saw something about Steph, man. You know, Steph deserved that MVP, but it's clear he's not the best player in the league. And it was clear last year that he wasn't the best player in the league in the playoffs. And there was just something about their style of play. And Bogut, too. Bogut getting hurt, too, hurt them as well. Because they were just able to go to the rack for 48 minutes opposed to 30
Listen,
minutes or 24 minutes.
Bill, you're being real gracious, man. I can appreciate that. You're being real gracious. Wasn't nobody showing Cavs fans no love when Kyrie was out and Kevin Love was out. So, man,
yeah.
You're being real grateful
yeah.
and giving a lot of props to the Warriors and kind of, you know, owning the fact that there were some things that broke the Cavs' way. But that's competition, man. That's the way it goes. So, you know, I hear you. I definitely hear you, and you're being real diplomatic and real gracious. But it wasn't and I'm going to say it for you because I know you want to say it, but you're not going to say it, but I'm going to say it. If it was the other way, ain't nobody showing no love to the Cavs if so-and-so was out and so-and-so was out. At the end of the day, LeBron got to get it done, right? That's the way the narrative would have gone. It's LeBron's team. He's got to figure it out and get it done. And you know, I think your point about Steph is, you know, you got to get it done. You know, you got to make it happen. You got to figure out how to win those games down the stretch.
And I was, you know, first of all, Phil, it was a treat to go to game five of Toronto with you because it was at that game. And I actually was speaking to a group and told this story because remember at the end of the game, I was like, what's going on with Cleveland over there? Why guys weren't leaving the court? And you explained to me how they had made that change about not leaving the court until everyone was finished with their interview. And
If
you remember what I said, you know, there's something about how this team is developing. And you know, I had before the playoffs talked about Golden State, but I kind of went to this Cleveland side, took a lot of heat on that. But it was when you were, it's something you can tell when you're in a stadium live that gives you a sense of what's going on. And it was that moment. And then towards the end of the game, Phil, you remember when the Jumbotron had that, it was a timeout and it was, the camera was focused on LeBron. He had a triple-double that night. And the crowd was going wild. And he's kind of looking, trying to pay attention. He looks up and then finally, like salutes the crowd and they go crazy. And I realized the pressure that this young man is under. And looking at that, I was like, but you could see him evolving as a leader in ways that was crazy. And I left that arena. You remember how I left that arena? I was like, man, something different about him. And it was special to kind of see it evolve. What's crazy about it, I don't know if you see, he's got a new show coming out, which tells you about LeBron's bigger master plan, the Cleveland Hustle, right? This guy is not missing a beat. So now he's got this new show coming out focused on Cleveland. And, I mean, when the story is told about this young man from a broader impact standpoint, I mean, we're missing the layers. We're missing the layers of LeBron. I mean, he is literally playing chess and everybody else is playing checkers. I mean, when you talk about life, kinds of things he's doing, it's just there's so many layers to him.
Yeah. So while we're on this, while we're kind of transitioning a little bit, so you know we have the Cavs championship, and then we roll into free agency, and free agency is wild. Money's getting thrown around like never before. And KD signs with Golden State. Now, Phil, you hadn't had a chance, I don't think, on these airwaves to kind of weigh in and give your opinion on KD signing with Golden State. How did you feel about that?
I didn't mind. I didn't mind at all. I mean, I minded from being a Cavs fan. And my Michigan folks, I'm still a Pistons fan. But until they become relevant, I'm a Cavs fan. But outside of being a Cavs fan and seeing that the best team in the league in the regular season got better, I didn't mind Durant leaving because, I mean, honestly, when LeBron left Cleveland to go to Miami, that made the move for Durant to go to join superstars. To me, that made the transition a lot smoother for Durant, and that made the criticism that Durant would get a lot less because LeBron's already done that. To me, it says he's about winning. He's less about ego. He's less about to be the guy. I have to build something. Like all this stuff that, you know, we say that the Cats in the 80s, in the 90s were about. You know, Magic would never go team up with Bird, and Magic and Jordan would never team up with so-and-so. Well, maybe they wouldn't, but these guys – in this era, they are willing to do that. And I'm okay with that because, to me, that says that they're more about winning. And they're more about doing, like, it's less about ego. It's less about having to be the quote-unquote alpha male. And it's about, yo, I've been in the league for 7, 8, 10 years. I've had a lot of individual success, but I know I'm going to be judged by how many chips I can get. And if I can, you know, go to Oakland and team up with these Cats and this puts me in the best position to win, I'm okay with that. I'm supportive of that. I don't have a problem with that.
Yeah, and I think you're under – and this is something that I think is going understated across the narrative and the dialogue around KD's move is that if let's say LeBron has been with Cleveland the last 6 years and never left, right? KD would have gotten eviscerated. I mean, he would have gotten warhead nuked if he would have made this same decision, if LeBron hadn't kind of greased the skids already to make this an easier path. And I say that because not only is he leaving Oklahoma City not having won a championship, going to a team that just set the record for most wins in a season the prior year, but that's also the team that knocked out his team – in the playoffs after his team was up 3-1, man, he would have got destroyed. I mean, he needs to send LeBron a gift a month for the next season. Like, he needs to send that brother a gift a month for the next season because KD, we would still be ripping on KD if LeBron hadn't already kind of took the brunt of the blow when he left in 2010. Because as much as the decision, the show, the show itself, the TV show, The Decision, was a bad move, I think people would have been even more turned off by this had that not happened. Because it is the team that he lost to. It is already an amazing team. And it's just like, this doesn't fit the narrative that we've created. So that's one thing I think, you know, is a perspective that I think we got to recognize and kind of
understand. This would be very different if LeBron hadn't already kind of took us through this process, right? If he already took us through this whole process of a great player leaving his team and going somewhere else, because we had never really seen that happen with guys in their primes. Usually it's guys at the end of their careers. The other piece about it is the idea that that KD and Golden State are kind of the front-running favorite. And I still think it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out on the court. I think they'll make it work. They'll figure out how to make it work. But the things that you mentioned that hurt them in the playoffs against the Cavs was not having a rim protector. When Bogut left, they became a very different team. And the guys that they tried to put out there, Festus Ezeli and Anderson Varejao, just couldn't get the job done. And they haven't really signed anybody who's going to fill that role for them. And that's a role that they're going to have to figure out. KD can do it for spurts, but that's not what he's out there for. So that's something that they're going to still have to figure out, because that's still a glaring need and a glaring hole. And having to and signing KD and having to let go of some of the ancillary pieces that made them a special team, the most space, the Barbosas, letting go of some of those guys, it'll be interesting to see how they kind of piece it together. They're going to have some rookies and some of the younger guys who are at the back of their bench, the Kevon Looney's and the James Michael McAdoo's, are going to have to step up and carve out a role and a niche for themselves in the league this season. They'll be good, but I don't know if they're going to be – this ain't a video game, and we learned that with the 2010 Heat. It's not a video game, and just because you stack the roster doesn't mean they're going to play well together, because you still got to play basketball, and it still has to all make sense on the court, and people have to understand how they fit together. And as we kind of move out of the KD situation and we move into kind of a lot of social unrest in the country – We have some athletes, in particular Carmelo Anthony, who as a basketball player, I haven't been a big cheerleader of his, amongst many other athletes, kind of particularly in the NBA and the WNBA, taking a stand and making some pretty profound and pretty bold social statements. And did you have any thoughts on kind of that whole 2 to 3 week period where we had a lot of athletes, particularly in the world of basketball, speaking out against some of the societal happenings that were going on in different communities around the country?
I loved it. I really did. I loved it. You know, throughout, you know, the 6 year tenure of this show, we've highlighted just how much respect we've had of the Bill Russells and the Muhammad Ali's and the Jim Browns, and been skeptical of some of the athletes of our generation, of how they haven't spoke up enough. And, you know, for me, this is one of the reasons that I look up to LeBron and really respect what he's done as an athlete. You know, back in 2010 when they were doing this whole free agency thing, I think he really leveraged his worth when that whole class, they kind of collaborated and figured out what they were going to do, and a lot of the owners and the GMs didn't like it. And I loved it because they were pretty much saying, like, yo, we're going to figure out what we're going to do. Even the guys that didn't sign, you know, the Stoudemires, the Boozers, everybody in that class, like, they kind of talked to each other before free agency opened up, and that was just a start for LeBron. And we see, you know, the scholarships that he's doing in Akron, you know, very similar to the Kalamazoo Promise, and what they did with the ESPYs with Chris Paul and Carmelo and LeBron, and then what you referenced, Marcus. I love it. I really do, because I think in the 90s and the aughts, there was this athletes, I think, were scared and really questioned if they took a stand,
at what cost would they be doing it? And now, I think because as a society, it's more acceptable to be and it's more expected to be socially conscious about things. It's almost a cost if you don't, like, if you're not socially conscious about these things now. And so I really enjoy seeing these athletes step up, and not just the mega personalities and athletes like LeBron and Carmelo. You know, you mentioned the WNBA athletes. You know, I'm really enjoying it. I really am. And I respect them for speaking their mind and really standing up for what they believe in.
Yeah, and I think it's fantastic that in the year that Ali passes, you have this kind of a movement amongst athletes to be more vocal about the things that they believe in outside of sports and how they want to leverage their notoriety to bringing voice to issues and plights that they deem worthy. Along with that, you know, you talked about how in the aughts and in the 90s, maybe athletes weren't doing this. And I think there's a role that social media has played in not only creating a space for athletes to have a voice, but also for athletes to realize that there are other people who maybe feel the way that they feel. And the reason I say that is because we know a lot of these cats grew up in bubbles, right? They had their handlers. Whether it was AAU coach or uncle or an older brother or their father or their mother or whoever it was that kind of really insulated them from a lot of, like, contact. And they were somewhat sheltered. A lot of these guys were somewhat sheltered growing up because people didn't want negative influences coming into them, coming around these players and being able to influence their decision-making, whether it was what school they were going to or whatever kind of decisions these kids were making. And so a lot of these guys grew up in bubbles. And so you don't get that understanding of, like, the world and the opinions that may exist. And so, you know, I think sometimes the athletes in the 90s may have been, as you said, worried about the cost of speaking out because they didn't know that they would have had a ton of people that they would have been resonating with, right? They didn't understand that. But now through social media, these athletes can connect with people and realize, yo, there are tons of people who agree with me on this. And I think that emboldens them to kind of speak out and speak up in ways that maybe past generations of athletes did not. And I think also when you think about Ali and Russell and Jim Brown, they knew what they were standing for. They had a whole legion of people who had their backs because those were the issues of the time for particularly African-American people and people of color. And I think over time, I think athletes had moved away from being a part of the community to these kind of little satellite or these little bubbles that these athletes existed in. And I think those walls have been broken down through the connection that athletes can make through things like the Players Tribune, the Twitter accounts, Instagram, social media, all these other things that athletes can access their fans and kind of have a direct line to the people and get an idea of what people are thinking about. Helps them better, I think, one, kind of formulate their own ideas around things, but also get a pulse of where they stand in the world and how they can influence things. So I agree with you. I think it's been very powerful watching athletes leverage that. So then
players.
We roll forward and – go ahead.
No, go right ahead.
Well, I was going to have us roll forward, and now we get into the Olympics, right? So as the summer has progressed, now we're at this point where we're in the Olympics. The Olympics games have come around under some shady circumstances, I guess is the best word I could think of. We talked about all of the things that were supposedly wrong with Rio, from the water quality, recently the water color. I mean, like, it's just been a bunch of, like, stuff. I mean, things not being done. And it seems like this happens every Olympic cycle. There are things that just are wrong, but it seems like there was more this time around. At least, again, I don't know what role that the media access and social media played in it this time around, because that's something you always kind of have to take into account. Like, well, maybe we just have more access to information than we did 4 years ago or 8 years ago. But it seems like it was just a lot going wrong in Rio, man. I mean, from the Zika virus to, you know, police not getting paid. It's just a lot. So, but it hasn't, at least me personally, I will say it hasn't impacted my ability to enjoy these games. There have been some amazing performances. The U.S. gymnastics team. I mean, that may be the dream team of gymnastics teams, man. I mean, like, that may we may look back at this gymnastics team and be like, yo, man, that was the 92. That was the equivalent of the 92 men's basketball team that we saw this Olympics. You got them winning the team competition. Simone Biles winning 4 gold medals. Lori Hernandez winning a silver. Allie Raisman cleaning up, getting a silver. I mean, just in all around, I mean, they just were phenomenal. And then you got Gabby Douglas, who cleaned up last Olympics, who is now kind of like in the background. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's kind of crazy. I mean, this is a great gymnast. So the gymnastics team is amazing. Michael Phelps doing his thing and getting his 23rd medal. Just ridiculous. The most decorated Olympian ever. Usain Bolt, who is, I think he's running tonight in the 200 to see if he can't get another gold medal and begin to kind of cement his legacy as the greatest sprinter of all time. On top of that, great performances in beach volleyball, on the women's side. Both the men's and women's basketball teams are on course to win gold. Just a lot of amazing performances. D. Wills, what has been kind of the most impressive thing you've seen thus far at these Olympics?
I saw this on the rundown, and it just – I mean, all the things you captured made it very difficult for me to even pick. I mean, obviously, I think Simone Biles and what she's done, but also, you know, Katie Ledecky in the swimming. I mean, she's beaten people – like, usually in swimming – you get there and it's like a close end. Like, in, I think in the 800, she's hitting the wall and she still got to wait 20 seconds for everybody else to get to the wall. I mean, she's dominating in ways that's crazy. And so I was just impressed in the way that they just don't even challenge her. I mean, she's swimming down one lane. All of them are still swimming up to the next wall. It's I've never seen anybody dominate like that. So that, and I think Simone. But at the end of the day, it's both. You know,
yeah,
the crown jewel of the Olympics is both. I mean, it's not just the winning, it's how he winning. From the introduction when they put the camera on him at the block, where he brushing his shoulders off. He's smiling before he's in the block. He's telling everybody to be quiet before he gets down. Then he behind at 50 meters, and he just bursts. I mean, his flair, and he's done it for 3 straight Olympics. And if he hits the 200 tonight, you know, I think the only person greater than him, and they talk a lot of stuff, people forget Carl Lewis did the 100 and 200 and the long jump. You know, and so at the Olympic Games, the crown jewel event, is track and field. And Bolt is killing folks. That's it.
Yeah, I think the if a picture could encapsulate an athlete's like whole career, it's the meme that's going around of Usain Bolt during the semifinal where he's ahead of it, where he's just like passing everybody and everybody else is like focused on the finish line and dude is staring right at the camera smiling. That's Usain Bolt right there. It's just ridiculous, man. That's him, right? I'm ahead of everybody else. They looking stressed, and I'm just like, yep, I got this, you know. And the thing about it is that's a real picture. Like, that's not like a poster or something that somebody put together.
No.
Like, that happened during competition. Like, he was running a race, turned, and smiled at the camera. As he was passing people. Like, come on, man. You ain't supposed to be, like – it's
right.
Crazy,
he's
man. But I agree,
fastest
man.
People
yes.
in the world.
Yes. Yes. At the Olympics. So it's not like he's racing. It's not like he got in a foot race with a couple dudes around the way.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, man, I'm going to race you to the stop sign type deal. No, this dude is at the Olympics against the best sprinters in the world, and he got time to give to cheese as he's passing them. Man, that's some big brother type. You know when you race your older cousin or your big brother or something, and you
12 or 13, and they like 16 or 17, and they smoke you, and they get in front of you, and then they start running backwards, laughing at you.
Right. Like, man, don't talk to me, man. That's, you didn't have to do all that. You could have just won.
Right.
You just won. Clowning me. I mean,
that's what Usain Bolt is doing, man.
And he's having so much fun. I've never seen someone enjoy a moment more than him and embrace the moment more than him. He's just, and he's 6'5". So he's doing this with a body type for that race that he's not supposed to be doing it with. That's the crazy thing about it is, you know, he's doing it at 6'5". Trying to do it, man. I can't. He just, every time I watch it, man, I just, it's must see TV. The 200 is going to be the same thing.
Yeah, but I think it
adds to do you think his name is really Bolt? Do you think that's really what's his given name?
Right? Like, this all could have been that much of a coincidence. I think about that sometimes. I agree with you. I thought about that a couple of times. Like, yo, man, the universe don't work like that. You know what I'm saying? Where you get to be 6'5", lightning fast, and your last name is Bolt. Come on, man. So you need to see some papers.
Right.
I mean, but there are times where there's some cats that you grow up with, and you know, like a cat just got a name, and it's like, yeah, you're gonna be a football player, or that's a basketball player. Now, you know what I mean? And it was like, I guarantee, from when the moment he was a kid, it's like, yeah, you better run track with a name like that.
Yeah,
I guarantee he's heard that from a couple of old heads a couple of times. Oh, so your name Bolt, huh? You better run track with a name like that.
That's about all you can do.
Right, you better not be slow.
You ain't doing no acting.
So, Phil, who are some performers that impressed you, man?
Michael Phelps. That is, I mean, clearly Bolt and the other headliners too. But Michael Phelps, man, that is, you know, I've got into swimming, you know, the last couple of months, and, you know, it's, I would get my Michael Phelps on at 5:15, four mornings a week, you know. But I got to tell you, man, this dude is, how many medals does he have? Like 30-something?
23. I think 23, but that's still a ridiculous number given that most people only get one. If you got three, you're like killing it. You know what I'm saying? Like, seriously, like if you got three medals, you killed it. Like, you did work.
Yeah.
You know,
did work.
To have like 23, that's just like you won all the medals. He came home with all the medals.
In a range of events, this dude is doing, man. You know, it's like 50 meters, 100, relays, backstroke, freestyle. It's just impressive. It really is. Whenever I watch the Olympics, I have this appreciation that these are the best people in the world. These are the best people in their respective countries. And just to see somebody just dominate like he's done over multiple Olympics, that is just so impressive. It blows my mind.
Yeah, I agree. Bolt and Phelps have both impressed me. The person I'm going to kind of give some shine to is Simone Manuel, who became the first African-American, I think, woman to medal, to get a gold medal in swimming. And the history behind it is amazing, right? Just in itself, unbelievable. You know, sisters, again, breaking boundaries. I'm all for that. The other piece of it, though, is that, you know, when you think about the history of it, man, sisters ain't trying to get in that water. They ain't trying to make their hair. That's why it's taking so long.
No.
So to overcome all of that.
and become the first sister to win a gold medal in 2016. I'm letting you know, man, there's a whole lot of history behind that that only we going to talk about. Like, the media is not going to talk about why sister's getting in the water. We could have been had a sister win.
Yeah, I was like, how'd you get through all that? How you negotiate that path? And got all that hair. I'm like, oh yeah. When I saw that, I was like, nah. You've accomplished something. You got sisters in the shop talking about that all the time.
Right. So maybe we could get some younger sisters now to get in the water. You know what I mean? Tighten up the cap a little bit. You know, my daughter even made a comment. You know, she's got on a swim cap. You know. And then she took it off. She had another cap underneath. She's like, is there another one under that one? You know, she's dropping, but she's laying out the blueprint. You got to put on like three caps. Protect the lock. Protect the lock. The other team I want to give shine to. Seriously, it is. This is stuff we got to think about, right? We have to think about this stuff, and not very many other people have to think about this. The other folks I want to give shine to, the U.S. women's basketball team. They haven't had a close game yet. They probably won't have a close game. I think this group of women is the – we talked about – I try to use this analogy with gymnastics, but I think this is the best women's national team we've ever been able to send. And we probably got like four or five players – who aren't on this team, who if you put them in it, they probably get a medal. Like if you put them on, if you put them in it as a team, they probably get a medal too. I mean, we don't have Candace Parker. There's a couple other phenomenal players who aren't participating, who could be, should be. And we just, I mean, they're just kicking butt. And it'll fly under the radar. And they've won, I think, 46 to 47 straight games in international competition. And it's something I learned the other day. Only two countries have ever won gold medals in women's basketball, us and Russia, which is crazy when you think about it. One, it hasn't been around that – it hasn't been around as long as the men's game. It goes back to the early 80s, but still. Like, when you got just two countries winning it, and right now we kind of on the run because Russia be they on that Barry Bonds. Putin ain't playing, man. Putin like, hey, man, we gonna get some mess. Hey, when you got a government, a systemic government plot to dope up your athletes, you trying to show out. You ain't just trying to win. You trying to show out. Like, y'all trying to make a comeback. Y'all trying to be like the old Russian I remember growing up.
And you German, about. You know. You just, I was so frustrated because you knew they was dope. Couldn't do nothing about it.
You know.
If he dies, he dies.
He dies, he dies. Looking at him like that. You know, just drag him. You know, that's what the young lady trying to do to your girl. Lily King, she gave her the finger like, if you die in the water. Lily came back on her. Like, what you
Yeah, thought. Man.
Yeah. That,
Yeah, Lily King, she carrying that torch, man. She carrying that righteous torch. She trying to fight the good fight, man. She came back at it and said, I won clean. I'm clean.
Napping on.
Yes.
Nobody.
We're going to take a quick break, fellas. I'm gonna take a quick break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to get into this fantasy football, man. It's fantasy football season, and we got to get everybody right. I know they come to us for good, solid advice. So we're gonna give the people what they want. We'll be back right after this. You listen to Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com, RSG, Renegade Radio.
Go, nothing can stop me, I'm all the way up.
Yeah. shorty, what you need? My nuts run the game, we ain't never leave. Counting up this money, we ain't never sleep. You got V12, I got 12 V. Got bottles, got weed, got half.
I'm all the way up.
Shorty, what you want? I got what you need. Shorty, what you want? I got what you need. Shorty, what you want? I got what you need.
I'm all the way up. I'm all the way up.
Rolexes, kicked the bitch out the room and gave her no breakfast. Had to stash the jewels, these bitches so reckless. Keep on, so cruise, I'm talking naughty uptown, showing off a new thing. Couldn't take it all, so I gave her un ching. She called me top shot, so yeah, I keep a few tings. Champion sound, yeah, I got a few rings. And I'm all the way up, and you can stay up. And if you ask anybody where I live, they point to the hills and say, go all the way up, go all the way up, I'm all the way up, I'm all the way up, nothing can stop me, I'm all the way up.
Just left a big house to a bigger house, ain't have a girlfriend but the bitch is out. Chanel croc bags, they even out, with the gold chains, Himalayan Birkin, cocaine lit it up, pop. Hit him up, I'm talking color money, purple yin and blue germ. I got brown lira. I ain't talking about Royce, bitch. I'm that nigga on Viagra. That means I'm on the way up, and you can stay up. P.O. say I can't get high, hop in the helicopter. Uber said, go all the way up, go all the way up.
I'm all the way up.
Welcome back to the Real Sports Guys. The Real Guys Talk Real Sports. We're talking the Olympics. We're going to get into some fantasy football in a little bit. But before we move into talking about fantasy football, we wanted to talk about the U.S. men's national team and how things have been going with this rendition of the Dream Team. First off, before we can really have this conversation, we have to talk about a couple of things. One, D. Wills, your boy Draymond. Now, this is one of the situations where, like, you know, you hanging out with your friends, and one of your guys brings, like, his buddy, and then that dude is doing too much all night, and every couple minutes you got to, like, elbow your guy and be like, man, get your boy. Like, well, hey, PAZ, what DMX say? That's your man. Get your man's in them. D. Wills, you gotta get your man's in them. Your boy Draymond, man, he's having quite the summer. Not only is he kind of riding the bench for the Dream Team, but he picked up a DUI and sent some sausage picks. And then everybody's phone getting hacked. I don't understand. Maybe I'll understand one day if my phone get hacked, but I don't understand how people's phone be getting hacked. Maybe it's a thing. I just feel like that's something that people say when, like some stuff they put out get out. Like your phone, like D'Angelo Russell did, his phone got hacked. Your phone ain't get hacked. I ain't heard nothing about that. Your phone ain't get hacked, brother. That don't happen. Kim Kardashian's phone stay getting hacked.
Right.
It's like she's always posing in the pictures to get hacked. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's never the ugly pictures that get put out when her phone get hacked. Right. But she's taking the phone hacked. She need to call Lifelock or something like that. I don't know. So, you know, Draymond claiming his phone got hacked. He's sending sausage pics out. I don't know, man. What's up with your boy? Explain. I got,
man,
my legal pad. I got a little manila folder with a bunch of just a list of stuff. I got legal paper, manila folders, you know what I'm saying? Them little paper clips, you know, the ones that look like a duck mouth. I got them. I'm ready, man. What you got?
Well, you know, So I'm gonna put a shout out to my guy Hank, who had the one mic, and Hank, if you have a chance to listen to it, check us out on realsportsguys.com, and Hank, or iTunes. Hank really went in on Draymond. Hey man, he's falling off, and you know, the thing that happened up in East Lansing is like, okay, why are you back in East Lansing? Then why are you fighting a young man on the football team over something that just seemed too crazy? So that started it.
Yep.
And got petty with that. But even before that, they remember they lost, and then he was down in L.A. at the strip club, right? Pictures going up. So it's starting to unravel on him in ways that just is not right. And you know, I can't explain it, man. The pick one was just crazy because he pressed the wrong button on Snapchat, right? It was supposed to be a private exchange, and then he pressed the button, and then it goes out. So just, you know, a person who is not making good choices is important. And one of the things about getting Durant is I think you hit a really important about he doesn't cover everything they need, but getting Durant, if Durant says, gives them flexibility to say, Draymond, you need to act right, you know, in ways that he's going to have to pick it up, man. And I think that's part of the reason why the time was limited with the Dream, with the Olympic team. You know, Coach K, I mean, that happened right there. That just limited a whole bunch of stuff. So this cat has got to get his mind right. You know, he over his skis too much. And I got a feeling he will get it right by the time the season starts, but right now it's not a good look at all. And Golden State's the kind of organization that is real sensitive about those things. He, you know, somebody needs to pull his chain and pull him back in with it. You know, everybody talks about Izzo and all the things he does. You know, Izzo might need to pull him to the side and have a conversation with him. So I can't explain it, brother. When you do that kind of stuff, I can't even defend it. You're on your own now.
And so this is what I'll say around this whole kind of situation, the off-the-court stuff. I'll say my off-the-court piece, and I'll say my on-the-court piece. Off-the-court, but this is, like, I think this is just Draymond. Like, this is what you get. Like, he's the petty champ. Like, you talk about the fight was petty. Like, that's what Draymond stay on, some pettiness. Right? I mean, he's Tom Petty. There's Petty Murphy in the house right here. You know what I mean? This is what he does. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's a part of his whole, like, swag. Is he real petty?
I don't think it's petty. I think he fights for everything. And he ain't let no I don't think it's pettiness. I think part of how he got where he is, he don't take a step back on anything.
Agreed. And sometimes that could be a detriment.
That could be a
detriment. And sometimes that could be a detriment. You know, Kobe is the same way. Like, step off the gas, man. Like, sometimes you got to step off the gas. You're hurting yourself. You know, don't cut off your nose to fight your face. And Draymond has kind of always had that personality where, you know, again, he's that one dude you have in your crew or on your team who you are like, yo, man, you got to chill. Like, you're going to start a fight trying to prove a point, not start – like, he's the dude that comes in trying to break up the fight and winds up fighting. he won't back down.
I love
it. You know what I mean? Like, he trying to be the peacekeeper, and then he gets to arguing. Like, dude, that's no. You were trying to keep the peace. Why are you arguing now? Because he got to be heard. Like, he got to get his point across. I guarantee I had a fight started. I guarantee Draymond was trying to get his point across and just would not shut up. So that's the piece where a piece of the other side of the coin to Draymond being who he is on the court is that's who he is off the court as well. And we've seen this historically, you know, whether it be an Anthony Mason or Charles Oakley. Enforcers it doesn't work outside of, like, the court. Like, when you're the enforcer, that only works on the court. You can't be the enforcer at the nightclub. You just can't, man.
Right.
You can't.
You know what I mean? Like, right. You can't be the enforcer, you know what I'm saying, at the restaurant. You can't. Like, you just can't. You gotta know when to take that hat off. And that's what you love about Draymond, is that he's always at that level. But then you got to also understand that he's always at that level. You know what I mean? Like, he's always – like Anthony Mason. Like, he's always ready to fight. As Cedric the Entertainer most famously said, can't go nowhere, Anthony Mason, he's always fighting. And that's Draymond. Like, I imagine that is Draymond. Draymond is that dude.
I mean, he's always
that,
at level.
That also adds to my – that also adds to my theory. That's why he can't be a lead dog. That's also adds to my theory why he can't be a lead dog.
Nah, I'm still not gonna let that go, but did you see him at the volleyball game? Like, he is always on 11. Like, did y'all get a chance to see him at the volleyball fan box? Okay, like he was on 11 in the crowd.
But that's appropriate. That's an appropriate venue.
He had the flag on 11.
That's an appropriate venue. But like, I can see Draymond being at church, and he gets into a wailing match with a deacon. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's trying to out wail the deacon. You know what I'm saying? Like, he's trying to like go wow. Louder than the deacon. Come on, man. Just let it go, Draymond. Like, dude, 85 years old. Let him have it. And before you know it, he's standing up yelling at the deacon. Wow, wow. And they just go back and forth, but it just become a thing, man. It just become a thing. You know what I'm saying? But the volleyball game is appropriate. That's appropriate. That's an appropriate venue to kind of get that out, but. Again, I can see Draymond taking it to another level in places where he ain't got to be all that. On the court.
Hey.
On the court, this is where I think you start to see some of I don't think it's a slight on Draymond. I just think, you know, it's this situation where you got – and I hate to use this because it is a very patriarchal example, but we'll flip it this way. You got the best-looking – the strongest dude at your high school, right? Dude is the strongest dude at your high school. He bench whatever he bench. And then, you know, he get into a strongman competition, and he like, yeah, you was the hottest at the school, man, but these other dudes got you. You know, where it's like Draymond, in the context of what he's doing in Golden State, is very good. Very, 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 very good. He's a very good player. He'll be an all-star for a long time. He keeps doing what he's doing. He'll be a Hall of Famer. But then this is what we talk about all the time, is when you get into that little room, with those other dudes who are also really good, then the pecking order, you still got to make a pecking order. And it don't look like Draymond is very high up on Coach K's pecking order right now. Now, PhD, you have some thoughts on this? I'll let you go first.
Last year I questioned if Draymond was a legitimate, or 2 years ago, I questioned if he was a legitimate all-star quality player. Last year I came to you, Devon. I felt like Draymond was a legitimate all-star, regardless of what team he was on. And I felt like he was a legitimate top 20 guy. He could be a number two on any team in the league. That's where I was at the end of the season. Right now, I'm reconsidering it all at this point. His game should be tailor-made for the international game. He's 6'7", 6'8". He plays much bigger than that. He can guard in the international play. He can guard at least three positions. He can knock down the international three with ease. He handles the ball well. He can create off the dribble. There's no reason why his game should not translate seamlessly into the international play. If you look at the 12 guys that made the roster, so I watched the game against France. They only won by 3 points on Sunday. And 10 guys played in a rotation. There were two guys who did not play in the rotation, Draymond and Harrison Barnes. Draymond played 2 or 3 minutes in the third quarter. He played well in those 2 or 3 minutes, and Barnes did not play the whole game. that's a red flag to me, because this is not our A team. There are legitimately five or six guys who stayed home that could have easily been on this team and made the team. You know, like your LeBrons, your Westbrooks. I mean,
Chris Paul, LeBron, Westbrook,
your Curry.
Four dudes right off the top of my head.
That's right.
Kawhi Leonard there?
Nope.
All right, five. Bam.
Yep. Aldridge. We can keep going. So
six.
I have a problem that he's not shining on this B team. And I won't even call it the B team. I'll call it the A-minus team because we sent a good team. I have a problem that he's not rising in the exhibition games and the pool play games to earn minutes. And if anything, he's seen his role diminished. And the statistics bear it out and just the eye test bear it out that he does not deserve more minutes. To me,
I want to interrupt you for a second, PhD, because I want to say this. Your boy Kyrie, he has risen. And Kyrie is going to be, I mean, you talk about like 1-1-A, y'all going to be all right. Y'all going to be all right. Kyrie's impressed me. He's impressing me more and more.
Yeah.
But you continue.
Thank you. Any praise for a Cleveland Cavalier, interrupt me at any time. It'll be welcome. I will say, though, historically, I mean, going back to that first Dream Team, man, I remember Charles Barkley. He played in the Dream Team. Next year, he wins the MVP. It seems like since we start sending these NBA cats, you always see one or two or three guys that shine. I mean, even Odom, you know, back in 04, 08, where they play really well and they kind of shine, you know, Bosh. And all of a sudden, it just propels them to have, like, a breakout season. I was expecting Draymond to be that guy, man, and he has not shown that. And to me, that's concerning, and I'm pointing the finger. It's convenient, Devon, and I hate to do convenient things. You know that's me. I hate to do convenient things, but I'm going to do it right now. I feel like this is a lot of support that maybe it's the system in Golden State that makes Draymond shine and look good. And it maybe now that he's out in the open with just talent, with you know, top 30 guys in the NBA on this roster. And it's like, okay, I'm going to roll out the ball, work hard, and earn your minutes. And it's like, huh, now we see why this cat was a second-round pick. You know, I mean, when you got to roll out the ball and just get out there and play and earn your minutes, and there's not like a niche out there for you, I don't know. And so, in my mind, he may have a Hall of Fame career. He may go to another five or six All-Star games. But if he doesn't shine in these type of situations, I think it'll always be something in the back of my mind that, you know what, he was a guy that fit a system, and that's cool. So, you know, he's a Michael Cooper type of guy. He's a, you know, like he's a Rodman type of cat. But he's not like a skilled guy that can play in any kind of era. He's like, he's got to be a situational type of dude.
And that's always been kind of my perspective. He's very good. He'll be a Hall of Famer. I think Steve Nash is a system cat. I don't take that. I don't look at that as a knock, though. I think when he was in Dallas, Nash was a 16.8 assist dude. He was the same player. Like, he was the same dude. He did the same stuff. It's just the system wasn't geared to allowing him to do it at a really high volume. And so, like, the numbers and the impact wasn't there because he wasn't getting to do the things that he does well over and over and over. And I think the things that Draymond does really well, Golden State system allows him to do those things over and over and over, and that allows him to have a larger impact on the game. That's what I think. And I think when he gets into this setting where, there's another dude who can shoot, who can handle the ball and who can guard three or four positions, and he's 6'11". Yeah, Dre, you're going to have to sit this one out. You know what I mean? And so, like, when you get to the elite of the elite, I don't think he's in that category. I think he needs a certain type of ecosystem, a certain type of environment to do what he does at a high level. And you can't just roll the ball out and be like, yeah, just you got to just figure it out and think that you're going to get Draymond that you've seen the last 2 years in Golden State. I don't think you can do that with him. I think you have to really gear it to maximize him, right, to maximize what he does. To get what you've seen the last couple of years from him, you have to build something around him and build a system that fits, that he fits into and that fits his gifts. But he is a gifted dude. But that's why I don't think he could be a lead dog, because he's such a finicky kind of an ecosystem type cat. You can't just be like, let me, because it makes it hard to build a team around a dude like that. You can do it. It's just like, and I feel like this about pretty much most of these dudes on the team this year, is that they're all system-y type cats, from Carmelo to Paul George. The guy, the one guy I'd probably say is, you put him where, as Jay-Z said, you put him on God, anyway you put him on God Green's earth, he's going to triple his worth, is my man Cousins. I think he needs to be in a good locker room, but as far as on the court, you can put him in any type of system, he's going to give you 20 and 10, at least. He's going to give you 20 and 10. He's going to do his thing no matter what type of environment you put him in. I think he will do what he needs to do, and he will be what you expect him to be on the court. As far as in the locker room, in the meeting room, with the coaches, listen,
yeah,
man, listen, he got some free will in him.
Yeah. Hey, Devon, I tell you what, D,
yeah.
Before you go, the last thing I'll say, man, with Draymond, if Marcus and I are right, Draymond is going to have to be okay getting mid-range salary money. Because if he, in his next contract, if he demands max money, that's going to be a problem if he's still with a really good team like the Warriors. And they still have the pieces that they have now. That's going to be a problem. Like, he can't be drawn, like, trying to demand max money when, you know, at that point he's going to be 7, 8 years, 9 years in the league, and all his warts are going to be exposed. He's going to need to be okay getting, you know, 15, 16 million a year and not pushing to get 25 a year.
Yeah, and I agree with you, Phil. And I think this year, with Kevin Durant coming to Golden State, Dre and Clay are going to be the ones who are going to be impacted the most. Steph is going to get his, and Kevin Durant is going to get his. The two guys who are going to get less are going to be Dre and Clay. And it may not be necessarily less, but it's going to be different. It's going to be most different for those two, as to how they're going to get what they get and how many looks they get, and how many touches they get and how many chances they get to do the things that they do, is going to be different, most different for those two guys. Now, both of them were very much okay with Durant coming. It's one thing to say that in July. We'll see how they feel in February. Now, if they have the culture that they say they have, it shouldn't be a problem. But I know all that can go out the window with one bad conversation. All that lovey-dovey culture can go out the window with one bad conversation. Especially with Draymond in the room.
Backing off the ride.
Hey, all that can go real left, real fast. And you know, I wouldn't be shocked at some point in the next couple years if this thing with KD goes really well, and KD decides to stay. They may have to start pruning the tree in Golden State, and if they have to move somebody, it may be Dre.
It
may be
Clay, because I think it'd be Clay. But let me I'll let y'all go. I think we're outthinking this. I think there's a couple things here that is different, and I'm gonna look in general. I think Coach K has struggled with how to coach his team. It's been a ball dominant, guard, less movement. There's been a lot of things with this team that have affected a lot of ways in which he's approached his team. I've watched all the games, and he has no real rhythm around the rotation. So there's other things. I also think that Dre's incidents we just spent time with kind of put him in a doghouse. And they've been in a way that he's still trying to work his way out of that doghouse. And so it affected the way his minutes. But I've watched against Serbia. They realized they had to play him more. They were struggling with some of the other things. I think in these medal rounds, you're probably going to see him play in different ways with that. But I also think that his attitude towards the summer, his attitude towards all this stuff is affecting how he's playing in the Olympics. So he's got, you know, there's no other way for us to talk about it. I think it's affected what he's done. He's got to walk away from this and think and reflect on that in his approach. But I think that incident, as soon as that happened, I knew his minutes was going to be cut. Because you can afford to do that with that kind of team. And because I think Coach K and those are really conscious about the brand of the program and everything that they're building. So I knew he was going to be in trouble with that, particularly where they were playing him. So the way in which I've watched this team play, constructed, rotated, I'm not as I think there's a lot of struggles in how they've managed this team. So that part I'm not as affected on how it's going to affect Dre moving forward. I think there's just some things he's going to have to do in his own personal life. I don't think he approached these games focused. I think there's a lot of things he's got to deal with. Or he's going to have the outcome that I think y'all both have talked about. As it moves towards the season, I think because he's a Swiss knife, he can play a lot of different ways. He's going to find a way to play and make it, enhance it, and still be that glue to do it. What I did watch in this one more so left him more Clay, even though he had a good game in these recent things, is that Clay is somebody that needs to get a rhythm to do what he's doing. And you saw how he struggled when he wasn't able to do that. And I think there's going to be nights where he's not going to get the rhythm in a regular season when you add in Durant taking shots and doing some of those things. And so I'm actually more worried about how Clay – I think Clay emotionally is not as strong. You could see some of that even in the Olympics where just his mental game, when he's down in ways that take him out the game and he disappears in ways that I don't see Dre – happening. But I think a lot of that, and I think that Coach K's also built a system in terms of how he's building people in to be able to earn some of that stuff. So when Dre had that problem, I knew he was in trouble. I knew he had to work his way back into something. So I think y'all made some good points, but I do think a lot of this is Dre's in a weird place right now, spiraling, that we're seeing play out in the Olympics. And I think what happens between the end of this Olympics and the beginning of the season, we're going to learn a lot more.
Yeah, and I think you got a valid point. Coach K doesn't want to put in a guy in a game, and every time he comes in the game, the announcer has to talk about the sausage pitcher. That's bad for the brand.
It's bad for the brand.
I understand. We just gonna avoid that whole mess. We just not gonna have him go in the game. They won't bring it up.
You know, that's a bad look, man. You got the kids, American apple pie. I mean, you know, it fits right with the lifestyle they have. Probably party in Brazil. He's probably right on point. But for what we're trying to do for a brand, for the program, he's not right there. So. Well, when they got into the hard stretches, particularly against Serbia, stuff like that, Dre was the one playing down the stretch, doing some different things. So I think Coach K's also realizing that he got to get him in, but he was in the doghouse straight up. I knew that.
Yeah.
He did that stuff. I'm like, that cat's in trouble. And with a team like that, once you get in the doghouse, you can work around that.
You're buried
once you're in the doghouse.
Well, a couple of those guys, they ain't in the doghouse. But they somehow accidentally walked into a brothel. I don't know how you go into a brothel and don't know it's not a brothel, especially in Brazil. I mean, that's a dead giveaway when you walk in that lets you know this might be a different type of place of business.
Hey, but I want to ask y'all a question. When you heard that Lockley refused to get down on the ground and they put that gun in his face, like, what was y'all thinking about when y'all heard them cats got robbed? Like, what was your thought when you heard, like, he like, I'm not getting down, and put the gun in his face? Like, what was y'all thought about that when the Swarmers got robbed?
Lockley was backstroking through the concrete. He was all in the ground. He dove into the ground. That's the story you tell after the fact. First off, man, Brazil scares me. I know some people think Brazil is just like, oh, fun and beaches. Man, listen, it's a part of Brazil. You talk about Chicago and New York and Compton, and, man, they ain't got nothing on the favela. I'm good. Man, I'm good. I'm real good. I feel comfortable walking in most hoods in the United States of America. As a social worker, I know how to navigate that type of situation. Man, please. I wish you would drop me off in one of them little shanty towns in Brazil. I'm done, man. I'm done. I don't know if I'm making it out.
Like, stay on the boat, man. Y'all got a cruise ship, you know, create the party.
Yeah,
man. I don't know what's going on.
But see, certain folks, certain ethnicities like to get adventurous. They want to go be with the locals. I ain't for that. That's not my mode at all when I'm on vacation. That's not my mode at all. I don't want to have the authentic experience. I've had enough authentic experience in my life. I don't need to go to another country and have their authentic experience. You know, you feel me when I'm saying authentic experience? I've had enough of that in my life. I'm not going to another country to see what their authentic experience feels like. I'm good on that. But for certain folks, they go looking for that. Sometimes you get that authentic experience.
I refuse to get down. He put a gun in my face. Yeah. Hey, you came with that suburban mindset. Something going on. Like,
man, the only way I'm not getting down is if I see that little red tip on it. The only way I'm not getting down if I see that red tip on it. I know that's a cap gun. That serves a cap gun. You're not getting me. You're going to have to fight me right now. Now I know you have a cap gun. We're going to have to fight this out.
They said a Russian diplomat got mugged. You know, Putin might send somebody.
Hey, listen, Putin don't want none. I'm telling you, man, Brazil is different. Putin don't want none. Man, they had, yeah. Listen, you better stay in the little area. Stay in your little area. Listen, it's real out there. It's real out there, man. You guys don't understand, man. You stay in that little Olympic area, man. I'm telling you, they got the little zone. Stay in your little zone, man. They ain't paying the police. So if something happened, who you finna tell? Like, who you finna tell? Like, that's what I was like. I was like, so when I heard about it, I was like, they reported to the police. I thought the people that jacked them was the police. You would have told the dude to rob you? That they robbed you? I mean. Listen, man. I told my wife that somebody was going to wind up being a cautionary tale about trying to do too much in a country like Brazil. And straight up, if I was down there, my whole goal would be to perform well athletically and not be that cautionary tale. That would have been number two on my list of things to do while in Brazil. Don't be that story. You know what I'm saying? Don't be that story that they will tell every Olympian for the next Olympics, next however many Olympics, until somebody else becomes a new story about you. That would have been number two on my list of things to accomplish
Marcus,
at the Olympics.
Marcus is giving this some thought. Considerable thought.
I'm just thinking about this right now because it's so stupid to me, man. It's just so stupid to me. This is one of my pet peeves, man. When people go to other countries and they want to act like it's sweet, it's a hard knock life everywhere, man. You need to watch. Okay, listen. Every neighborhood ain't like your neighborhood. Get that out your head.
I mean, what didn't you understand? They got Zika, they had the bad water, and the police wouldn't get paid. That told you to get to be
right.
under to have your head on a swivel.
Yeah, see, yeah, I can't, man. I can't deal with people
yep.
who like that, man. It just like I said, I've had enough authentic experiences in my life. I don't need to go partake in authentic experiences in other countries. I'm good. I'm on vacation from my authentic experiences. Oh, man. But we got a little bit of time left. So we're going to talk some fantasy football. Now, if you want the true lowdown, we're going to give you our perspective. And we're all solid, quality fantasy football participants, right? We're champions. I don't think all of us have won leagues. I'm hot off of a season where I took first and won. I think I took second and won. I was in three championship games out of four leagues I was in. So I took second and two,
wow.
first and one, and then one I got knocked out in the playoffs after being a second seed. So I had a really good year.
Yeah,
every
that,
year ain't like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, they call that kind of season – Yeah, they call that kind of season the Thompson Slam. That's what they call that.
My man.
you know the Serena Slam? Yeah, they call that the Thompson Slam. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I had a Thompson Slam. Whatever you want to call it, I had a really good year last year. Now, every year ain't like that. All right, so I ain't going to front either and act like I'm always right. But I do have a decent idea of what I'm doing. PAZ has just named a successful event after himself. So he obviously thinks he knows what he's doing.
Like he's a gymnast. Like he's a gymnast. You know, that was name of moves.
Right. That's the Thompson he just completed. And D-Wheels has a nice fantasy football trophy case. Built in his home with some hardware over the years. So we all kind of know what we're doing. So, again, me being me, I believe preparation is the key to everything. And so, you know, I've been doing a little bit of preparation myself. Mock drafts, that kind of thing. This is just a part of my routine, right? We have this thing on our show called a Can't Trust Them list, right? We have a Can't Trust Them with the NCAA tournament. The Can't Trust Them list is very versatile. It's multifaceted. It's multi-purpose. You can use it in a lot of different arenas in life. It's just when you are in situations where you know there's some people you can't trust, and you need to make a list of them. So we got our can't trust them list of fantasy football players, folks that for the 2016 season I'm gonna lay off. I'll start with D. Wills. Who's on your can't trust them list for 2016?
Well, you know, in my can't trust list, I usually say you can't trust the system. So I always say stay away from Bronco running backs. You never know who's going to play. You don't know how they're going to do this. And they just don't, not as a primary thing. Stay away from historically. It doesn't matter who they coach, other than back when maybe Davis was starting. They always have a great person, but you can't trust them from week to week on what they're going to do. And don't trust any Patriot running backs. Because you never know what Belichick is going to do. So there's certain positions on certain teams you don't even mess with. So that's my first thing that I always kind of stay away from that you can't trust. The other thing you can't trust is I like him, but you got to catch him on the right year. Is someone like Eli Manning? You know, it's kind of like the San Francisco Giants. It's kind of like the San Francisco Giants. You got to catch them on that even year. You know that, like when they're going to win the World Championship?
Yeah.
Eli is the kind of cat, you got to catch him on it. When you catch him on the right year, you good. If you don't, you done. And so he's somebody I look at with just one eye, with my good eye, to see if he's going to do something. If I can pick him up as a backup, that's cool. But there's certain quarterbacks in that range that I can. The other thing you can't trust is the hot guy who everybody loves. So, like, he's the guy who's the backup quarterback that's now been signed by the new team. Everybody thinks he's going to be the next star. That's the other guy you watch out for. But there's a few that you just got to watch out for.
All right. Yeah, and I'm with you on that philosophy. There's certain systems that, you know, I just don't really – I don't really do it. Like San Francisco wide receivers. Nah, I'm good. Nope. I mean,
that's right.
Nope. Just not going to do it. It's just not worth the pick. I'll pick you up off waivers. Other situations, Miami Dolphin running backs. Nope.
Yeah.
I don't think they've had a good one since I've been alive. I don't think they've had a consistently good running back in my lifetime. So I don't do the Miami running game at all, no matter who the coach is. I dig that. I dig that philosophy totally. And, yeah, there's always the hot names. You know, again, I've done some mock drafts, and a guy like Sterling Shepard from the New York Giants.
Yes.
People are drafting this dude really high, and I don't know if they forgot that the Giants have this dude named Odell Beckham. You might have heard of him. Blonde hair, you know, one hand catch, you know, flying through the air. That dude, yeah, he probably gonna get most of the passes. I'm just saying, he's probably gonna get most of the passes from Eli, who's an iffy quarterback. Who's on your list? I know there's some mainstays on your list.
D'Angelo.
Yep. And I don't care that Le'Veon Bell won't be playing early on. Don't mess around with Williams. I don't care what he did last year. Don't mess around with him. Devon, I'm with you with Eli Manning. And listeners out there, I don't care. Eli is going to give you that 450-yard game with 7 touchdowns. Don't pick him up. Don't trade for him. Don't do it. Because the next game, he's going to give you 6 interceptions and 2 pick sixes. Don't do it. Don't do it. Just do not do it. He's going to give you 4 fantasy points. Tony Romo has grown into that for me, mostly because of injuries, man. He just cannot stay healthy. Matthew Stafford, unfortunately, was that way when he had Megatron, and he doesn't have Megatron anymore.
Sounds like you're expecting a downgrade.
He had the cheat code, and he no longer has the cheat code. So, stay away from Stafford.
All right, and I agree, man. Stafford, I mean, yeah, you don't got Megs no more, man. Good luck. Good luck with that. You know, he's talking it up like it's going to be all right. All right, man, you could sing that all you want, man. You turn up the Kendrick Lamar in your locker room as loud as you can. Y'all is not going to be all right, though. It's not going to be all right. You know, he probably cried himself to sleep when Megatron announced his retirement. I guarantee you, he cried himself to sleep. He went home that night, laid down, and wept. Matt Stafford wept.
Right. Jesus wept. He said Stafford.
You know what I'm saying? Stafford wept. Guys on my list. The first guy on my list, similar to D'Angelo Williams. Now, there's some guys who were on my list and had permanent spots on my list who have kind of phased themselves out of the league. This list for me started with Willis McGahee.
Wow.
He was the first dude I banished. The second dude I banished was DeSean Jackson. And the reason I banished DeSean Jackson is because this fool cost me a game that would have got me into the playoffs because he wanted to drop the ball before he get in the end zone. I remember this moment very vividly.
Oh, yes.
Monday Night Football, Donovan McNabb is my quarterback. He has thrown what looks to be a touchdown that will then win me a contest. And this fool drops the ball before he got in. And I watched it as it happened. I said, I don't think he crossed the line with the ball. I was like, I hope they don't replay this. This is my inner dialogue. I'm like, I hope they don't replay this. And then they started replaying it. And I watched the replay. I'm like, this mug here.
And so I was done. I was done with DeSean Jackson at that point. I've never had him on the team ever since. Another guy I don't trust is Jonathan Stewart. And he gets some residual D'Angelo Williams kind of because they shared a backfield, so I think some of D'Angelo Williams' inconsistency. Every year I think Jonathan Stewart is going to have a good year. He disappoints me. And then the years I don't mess with him, he has a good year. So I'm just done with him. I'm done with him. Jonathan Stewart, he's on the list. Other guys who are on my list. DeMarco Murray, nah, can't trust him. Can't trust him at all. Again, he balled in a contract year, everybody. That's number one. That's like the dead giveaway. Like that, nope. It was contract year.
Where is he at
I'm
now?
Not messing with him. Right, exactly.
He's still in Philly or is he
in
Tennessee?
He's in Tennessee. He's in Tennessee.
Oh.
Another running back I don't trust, Ryan Matthews, for the Philadelphia Eagles. Don't draft him, please.
Yes.
You will be disappointed. He will hurt your feelings. He will have you throwing stuff on Sunday mornings. He just will. He just will. The other guy I'm not trusting, and he's always on my can't trust him list, and I know me and D. Wills have gone back and forth about this, Phillip Rivers. Listen. He's always been just kind of right there, and everybody always talks about Phillip Rivers like he's going to jump into that next tier, and he never does. He just stays right there, right below him. He's right in that next group, but he never is going to take that leap. And people, so I think people are finally at that point where they realize he's good, and that's just what he is. He's a good quarterback, but he ain't jumping into that next tier with Rodgers and Brady and Breeze and those dudes, and it's just not happening. So those are the guys who are on my can't trust him list. I also recommend not trusting any hot names coming out of camps. Because that's just always – sometimes I go back and look. Like, sometimes I will save columns from fantasy writers and look at them at the end of the season from what they was talking about at the beginning of the season, and they be way off. They just do because they're going off a rumor and innuendo, and ain't nobody telling them what's going on for real. Why would you? If you were a coach, you're not giving them any real information about who's doing what. Everybody look good, and that's what you're going to tell him. You asked me about him. He looks real good. You know, I'm not going to tell you he sucks. He's awful because I don't want the other team to know that. Then they won't guard him.
Right.
I want them to think he's the second coming to Jerry Rice so I can throw it to Megatron. You know, so those are the folks on my can't trust him list. Again, PhD is in the works of getting Eric Hamilton, the K-Zoo guru, our fantasy football expert. They're going to be dropping some fantasy football ciphers. Be on the lookout for that. Make sure you subscribe to the Real Sports Guys podcast. You can do that through iTunes. Just search Real Sports Guys, RSG. You'll get us. Also, you can go through our website, realsportsguys.com, to subscribe. If you subscribe to that, you will automatically get connected to the fantasy football cipher. It'll just show up in your queue when we do it, and you will get some of the best fantasy football advice you can get on the internet. Eric, we probably should pay him for the information that he gives us because I've scooped up some great pickups and won some games because of the work that he's done. He does the legwork, gives you the information. All you got to do is go point click. So, PhD, anything else you want to say about the ciphers when they coming out or anything like that?
Just a heads up. I'm in Eric and I have been in the same league for about 10 years. And I'm not sure the 1 year, you know, Eric and I did the ciphers all season. He didn't do very well, and I think I won that year. Because we, like, did it on Wednesdays and Thursdays, so he kind of gave me tips on what he was going to be doing. So you guys may need to do the ciphers with him this year, just a heads up.
I can't, man. Y'all killing me.
Oh, man.
You got Suge groaning, man. Suge don't like that. You don't want to get Suge upset.
We got
We got beef in the group.
We gotta get this
one. Right. I'm just kidding.
Make sure you're on the lookout for the fantasy cyber. We will be dropping those as fantasy football season approaches. So be on the lookout for that. Pretty much, you know, that'll do it for this edition. We're going to leave Phil PhD with the last word. He's going to close us out. PhD, the floor is all yours, man.
The last word is do not mess around with D'Angelo Williams. That's it. Have a good night. God bless. We'll be back in 2 weeks. RealSportsGuys.com. Peace.